This is Digital Story Podcast number 566, January 10th, 2017. Today's theme is 10 Questions I Ask Myself in Las Vegas. I'm Derek Story. If you've read my latest Nimble Photographer Journal entry, you know that I was a bit underwhelmed with CES this year. And I found myself muttering these questions as I roamed the hallways of Mandalay Bay and the Las Vegas Convention Center. So I thought you might find them interesting. This show is really more about renovation than innovation, in my humble opinion. I mean, I like kitchen remodels as well as the next guy, but I don't usually travel to Las Vegas to experience them firsthand. And I know that sounds a little harsh, and I honestly don't mean it that way. I was just saying that I felt like I was seeing a reboot of a lot of stuff I saw last year, only newer versions of it. That gave me a lot of time as I was roaming around these hallways, as I said earlier, to ask myself questions. Questions about the show itself, questions about life in Las Vegas. As I was thinking about it, some of these questions that I was asking myself seemed kind of interesting to me. So I thought I'd share them with you. And this is my way of reporting on that show, on that event, on the last few days that I spent in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. First one, why doesn't my monorail pass work? So I don't know if you spent a lot of time in Las Vegas, but they have the monorail that, you know, runs basically from the MGM Grand to the convention center, and then all the way really to downtown Las Vegas with stops along the way. And it's a pretty good way to get around. It used to be better before everyone started taking it, but it's still a pretty good way to get around. What CES and the monorail folks cooked up this year, in the spirit of technology making our life better, was that if we bought our pass ahead of time, in other words, we paid for it up front before we came to Las Vegas, that they would incorporate our monorail pass with our CES badge so that we would have one easy-to-use, you know, badge for everything. My little voice said to me, you know, but what if something goes wrong? That's going to be a real pain in the butt. But then I go, no, come on, you're just being silly, and this is really cool, and this is really convenient. So I paid $24 up front for a three-day pass, because I go for two press days and then one full day of the show. And I said, that will be great, and it'll be all integrated in my badge and everything. I got my badge at the airport before I even got to the convention center. The first time that I tried to use my monorail pass, of course, it did not work. I got a yellow light, and then I got a red light. And you're supposed to get a yellow light and a green light. Those of you that went to CES and had a properly working badge, you know what I'm talking about. And those of you that didn't get a properly working badge, you also know what I'm talking about, don't you? So I politely walked all the way back to the monorail ticket area. I was at the MGM Grand, and there was actually someone working there, so I was lucky that way. And I told her what happened, and of course, she didn't believe me. And this is just like when you call tech support, isn't it? You know, we kind of know what we're doing, you know, those of us that listen to the show, a little bit, right? We're not total newbies. So don't you love it when tech support goes, well, did you turn it on? Yes, I turned it on. It was on. There's a green light, you know, that, well, same thing. She said, well, what lights were showing? And I said, it gave me a yellow light and then a red light. And she goes, well, we need to walk over there and I need to do it just to make sure that you did it right. And I go, it's a badge that you put on a scanning thing and I got lights. If I did it wrong, there wouldn't be any lights at all. But no, so we walked all the way over there, which was like, you know, a couple minute walk there. She does it on the scanner, and she got a yellow light and a red light. And she goes, oh, it doesn't work. Yes. So she took a picture of my badge, and she says, I'll send it to tech support. They'll have it fixed tonight. So all you have to do then, you know, when you come back, is it'll be working. And I'll let you in right now. So she let me in with her badge. And so then I went off to the show and did my stuff. And of course, that night I was coming back and I was saying, all right, I'm sure they got it fixed. My little voice is saying, no way. But I'm telling myself, it's fixed. I know it is. So put my badge down and I got a yellow light and I got a red light. It was not working at night. And so there was two other guys with me. I think they're from the Netherlands. And same thing happened to them. And I go, don't feel bad. You're not the only ones. And I go, I have heard that some of them work. So they just muttered to themselves and went off for something else. I ended up spending $5 for a one-way ticket to get home. So so then I wrote customer support. And customer support took about a day, you know, going back and forth. And basically they said, oh, that's too bad. But we can't do anything until after the show. Get back to us then. So I guess that's what I'm going to be doing. So why doesn't my monorail pass work? Well, because it wasn't implemented very well. That's why. So next year, when they offer me something that sounds too good to be true, I'm going to listen to my little voice. And if my little voice says yellow light, green light, I'll do it. And if my little voice says yellow light, red light, I'm going to pass. Next question. Where the heck is Olympus? So, you know, almost always before CES, I get an email from Olympus and they're saying, hey, you know, you want to have a briefing, you want to have a meeting, we're going to announce this, da, 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 you know, all that. So this year, I was thinking as I was flying into Las Vegas that I hadn't heard from them. And I was going, wow. Wow, you know, the first thing that you do, right, when that happens, go, wow, I wonder if I got bounced, you know. Maybe I drank too much in Iceland and said something I shouldn't have said. You know, so, you know, I'm thinking about all this sort of stuff. And I go, no, stop that. That's silliness. Just write them and find out what's going on. So I sent them an email. And my guy at Olympus wrote back right away. I love these guys. They're so courteous. Wrote me back right away and said, we're not showing up this year. We're taking a pass. And I go, you know, so at the time, you know, things hadn't really started yet. So I had no idea how wise they were. They obviously knew something that I didn't know yet. So, you know, they had already made their big announcements. They probably knew that Panasonic was going to make their big announcement. And they just decided, we're not spending the money. We'd rather send people to Iceland than, you know, when we don't have anything big to announce. So that's what happened to Olympus. They literally just passed on the show. I didn't get any details why, but, you know, we can pretty much connect the dots. They didn't want to spend the money if they didn't have anything big to talk about. And you know what I got to say to that? Hats off, right? You know, just don't show up and have nothing new to show. It's CES and we're expecting new stuff. So, you know, I admire them for that. And I want them to spend their money wisely. So that's where the heck they were. They were at home. And I'll just leave it at that. Okay. Is Lyft as good as Uber? I didn't know the answer to this. So since I didn't have a functional monorail pass, I had to look for other ways to get around Las Vegas. So another one of the offers that they gave us was that we would get 10 $5 credits for Lyft. So for 10 rides, we get a $5 credit for the first part of the ride, and then whatever the balance was is what we pay. Well, that seemed like a pretty good deal to me, especially compared to my previous deal. The only catch was you couldn't be a Lyft rider already, which I wasn't. I'd been an Uber guy the whole time. So I go, all right. So I downloaded the Lyft app, and I put it to the test. I set it up and put it to the test and thought, okay, this will be fun. I'll learn about Lyft. Both Lyft and Uber were running in Las Vegas. And I have to say that I like Lyft also. They're very cool. They have some things that are a little different than Uber. One is, I don't know if it was just my drivers or not, but all the Lyft drivers that I had in Las Vegas invited me to sit in the front seat. And I don't know if that's something they do on purpose or just my folks, but it was kind of neat. It was like they were literally giving you a lift. Hey, want a lift? Yeah, sure. All right. So that was nice, and they were all conversationalist. So, well, all but one guy. I got one guy that was really quiet. It was sort of like riding with my dad in a bad mood. But other than that, everyone was really good. And so I thought that was kind of cool. And then the other thing that Lyft does is that you go ahead and do your fare the same way you do with Uber, which is it's all taken care of. You don't have to worry about, there's no transaction at the end of the ride. You know how much you're going to pay, and then it's just automatically deducted from your account, just like Uber. Love that. The one thing that they do is that if you want to, you can give a tip with Lyft, whereas Uber, you know, they are totally anti-tip. And they just give you a little box, and you can do like a $1 tip or a $3 tip or a $5 tip, and you just click on the box. So I thought that was pretty cool, and there was actually two rides during the course of the week where I gave a tip because I just thought they were really neat people, and I like their story. I love talking to them. The whole experience was nice, and it was worth a couple bucks to me. Plus, I was already getting a $5 discount, so my fares are only like, you know, $2, $3, sometimes $4, and that was it. So I would say that if you're wondering about Lyft and how it compares to Uber, it compares very well, very nice. And now I have both apps on my phone. And, you know, whichever one is available or is working the best at the moment in terms of pickup times and so forth, I'll go with either one now. I think it's super. And it was like one of the nice little things I got out of this trip was learning about Lyft and talking to their drivers and just learning about their lives. It was fun. It was good stuff. What happened to the Canon booth? Oh my gosh. This was one of the moments where I knew CES was not going to be the same. You know, the Canon booth at CES is almost always like, you know, one of those places where you can just go and spend a whole lot of time. You can just go and there's all this stuff to do and it's very consumery and there's a lot of activity. Well, this year, I swear, to me, it felt like they had jobbed it out to a third party. It did not feel like the Canon that I know at all. And it's kind of off to the side and it kind of ran along the wall there. It was really weird. It was really weird. And, you know, that's what I'm thinking, you know, this is what Olympus probably wrestled with. Well, should we go in and just sort of half do it or should we just not go at all? And Olympus decided not to go at all. Canon, I tell you, I guess they probably felt like they couldn't get away with not going at all. And they did have a couple of announcements. But boy, ooh, what a letdown. So what happened to the Canon booth? I'm not really sure what happened, but whatever it wasn't good. When did AT&T fix its network? So I'm just sort of, you know, working CES, and I was over at Mandalay Bay, then I was at Convention Center, and just kind of rolling along, and I just noticed that my iPhone was always working. I was able to make calls, I could text, I was uploading pictures to Instagram, and I was just thinking, wow, it wasn't that long ago that if you come somewhere like this, where there are thousands of geeks using their phones all the time, and I watch people, I mean, they're doing stuff all the time, and especially younger folks, I mean, they're looking for dates and they're checking their Facebook page and they're, I mean, just constantly with their thumb. Like they're holding the phone in one hand, and the thumb's going bum, 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 like that. You know, they're just going through stuff. And so you know that a lot of network is being used constantly. And I was going, my phone's working the whole time. I'm having no connectivity issues. I don't need to connect to insecure Wi-Fi in order to get my work done. And you know, to AT&T's credit, I never really heard a big announcement about this. There wasn't a lot of fanfare. I haven't seen banners. Hey, you know, we spent a lot of money fixing this problem because we want you to have a better experience. None of that. You know, and AT&T, they take a lot of heat from users for their service and for drops and all that kind of stuff. Well, I have to say that in Las Vegas, when I was around all these people with all these phones, My AT&T service was very good, and I know that they put some guy in charge of this to say, hey, we want this fixed, and you have a big budget to do it. And by golly, he did it. And so I think that's pretty cool because that really made my experience better. That made my working life better, just made everything better. And I'm really pleased about it, and hats off to them for doing a job there. Why doesn't Panasonic get more credit for being great? Panasonic, for a long time, has been producing really good stuff. They're innovative. They partner with other people. They're broad in terms of, you know, they're working on batteries with Tesla, and they're creating really cool TV sets, and they're doing the whole Micro Four Thirds thing, and on and on and on. And at the show, they really had their act together. Their presentation was good. Their booth was good. Their product announcements were excellent. They're really working on their lens line. You know, not only are they continuing to bring new lenses into the category, which helps both Olympus and Panasonic shooters, but they're improving existing optics, ones that professionals rely on a lot, and making them even better. The GH5 is a terrific camera and is well-deserving of flagship status. And I just think they're a really together, happening, thoughtful, and useful technology company. I know that, like, when the GH5 was announced, yes, they got, you know, press on that. Obviously, they're not being ignored. But I don't see them getting the same treatment that, for example, Sony gets, or Canon, or Nikon. And you know what? I think they're right there. I do. And I think they're very deserving. So one of my takeaways from this show was, you know, I've been a Panasonic fan for a long time. I like the work they do. I have their lenses. I have a couple of their cameras. I probably should have more of their other stuff. And I'm just really happy with the work they're doing. And I just like to see them get a little bit more press. They're really deserving, and they had a great CES. Is it worth switching to Fuji just for the titanium X-T2? Oh, man, this one. I ask myself this question a lot of times. Fuji didn't really announce anything new, so they definitely fall into the renovation category instead of the innovation category for CES. But their renovation was sweet. That titanium X-T2 is a beautiful-looking camera. And, I'm already struck by the X-T2 anyway. I just think it's a gorgeous camera. And then they did this titanium model, which is so nice. And I just had to keep asking myself, is it worth switching just for this one camera body? Is it worth switching? You know, now, the answer is no. You know, and just like all things like that, once you get away from it for a little bit, then you come back to your senses. You do. You come back. But when I was there staring at it, I was going, is it worth switching? Is it worth switching? That was a beautiful camera. So I have resisted Fuji. You have done a heck of a job tempting me. You've been tempting me all along anyway. And I do have a couple of your cameras. But I don't have, you know, the interchangeable lens models. And I had resisted, and hopefully I'll be able to continue to resist, but boy, you're making it tough. Are we seeing comebacks from Polaroid and Kodak? Yeah, I mean, this is kind of interesting. Let's start with Polaroid. Okay, let's be honest. Most of the Polaroid cameras that I have seen over the last 2 years look like they belong in souvenir shops, you know, at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. I mean, really. Not high quality stuff. And I've been disappointed by that because Polaroid is a company that, you know, I've respected a lot in the past. So this year, though, they came out with a Polaroid Pop, which gives us traditional 3-inch by 4-inch Polaroid prints with the big border at the bottom and the whole deal. And I was looking at this thing, and it looks like it's really well made. And I like the specs. And I like the fact that they're coming out with nice big Polaroid prints on this thing. And it has some innovation to it, and it has some style and design. And I'm just thinking, wow, maybe, just maybe they're back on track. Maybe they're back on track, and they're going to get away from producing this really cheap stuff and give us some stuff that really feels like quality tools. So we'll see. But I think that the Polaroid Pop, if you haven't seen it yet, I've posted some pictures of it. If you haven't seen it yet, I think it's pretty nice, and it's a glimmer of hope as far as I'm concerned. Now, on the Kodak front, I started to see a glimmer from them last year with the Super 8, and I just felt like their booth had a little momentum. And this year, that momentum is picking up. They came out with a second version of the Super 8. They announced that they're going to bring back Ektachrome slide film. And just overall, things are starting to feel like they're finding their voice again. They're finding their place. And I'm energized by that also. So I liked seeing these two names that mean a lot to my photography history. I like seeing them fighting the good fight and possibly getting back on track. I'm pulling for them, and I hope I see more of what I saw next year at CES 2018. All right, two more to go. Is there no limit to what people will endure for a free lunch? And this is for those of you that have press badges. So on Media Day, which is the day before the show opens, we're over at Mandalay Bay, and there's a lot of press conferences, and there's a ton of media. And one of the things that they do is they provide a free lunch for people with media passes in this ginormous press room. And it is slammed, and it is what you would expect for free food in terms of quality and variety. And I just, you know, I stick my head in there, and I look around, and I go, Why do you endure this for something that is worth so little? And so I've stuck it out before, and then I was really upset with myself afterwards. So I felt like it was a waste of my time. This year, what I did is I followed up from what I did last year, which is last year I ducked out. This year I didn't even really go in. And I found myself a nice little, and you're going to be able to guess what I found, okay? I found myself a nice little taco stand in that area that is between Mandalay Bay and Luxor. There's like a little shopping area. I found myself a nice taco stand, Hussong's actually. I had myself a couple of delicious tacos. I had some very nice people waiting on me. I had some great conversations. They were asking me about the show. Do you think his press are going to come over? Are they feeding them? And, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was relaxing. I caught up on my email because I had connectivity that I was getting my work done. And then I was refreshed and I was ready to go back to work after lunch. And I was just thinking, you know what? That lunch, that whole lunch with tip and everything cost me $15. That's not cheap. I'm not saying $15 is cheap, but it was $15. That was a good $15. That was an hour and a half of relaxation, good food, nice conversation, and productivity. For 15 bucks, I'll take that anytime over the crush of a press room for terrible food and no productivity. And finally, the final question I asked myself, and this was a question that I asked myself on Saturday morning. So I came back late Friday night, even though the show was still going, but I was done with it. So I asked myself this question Saturday morning when I was curled up in a ball with my hoodie on. I mean, my hoodie over my head, hoodie on, curled up, oscillating between fever and chills. And I asked myself, is it possible to attend CES and not come away with a cold? And I think the answer is absolutely not, because no matter what I do, and I'm not a person that catches colds easily. I mean, I grew up with kids in the house. You know how that is, those of you that are parents. But yet, every time I go to CES, I seem like I catch something. And I caught this wicked 48-hour thing that you just feel like you're going to die the first 24 hours. The second 24 hours, you're going, oh, I didn't die, but kind of wish I had. And then suddenly you start to feel okay again. So the good news is that while I was dying, Saturday and Sunday, there was NFL playoffs on. So I could just sort of stare blindly at the TV screen. There's no way I was going to get any work done. Like, just stare blindly at the TV screen and watch, you know, these playoff games. Of course, the bad news was, those of you that are NFL fans, is that none of the games were good. They were all, like, big spreads. You know, one team just overpowered the other. And, you know, it was okay because I was in a stupor. Normally, I would not watch an entire game where one team was getting trounced that badly. But I did because of this. CES, you come away with a lot of things, and a cold seems to be one of them. So those are the 10 questions I asked myself at CES this year. Hope you got a little entertainment out of there, and I hope you learned a little bit about the show. In the news, DJI reportedly takes a majority stake in Hasselblad. So I think this was the big news story of last week. And this was reported by DP Review, which was based on an article that came out of Luminous Landscape. And so I'll just read what DP Review wrote here. DJI is reported to have acquired a majority share in Hasselblad, according to an article posted January 4th on Luminous Landscape. We asked DJI's Corporate Communications Director of North America, Adam Lisberg, about the reports, and he declined to comment. It's telling, however, that DJI isn't making an effort to deny the reports. The initial report from Luminous Landscape, written by Kevin Raber, and I was in Iceland with Kevin, by the way, he's a great guy, recounts the history of Hasselblad from the company's aerial beginnings to the announcement of the X1D system. Raber speculates that unexpected high demand for the X1D forced Hasselblad to look for funding to produce the camera. So, the venerable Hasselblad brand, now owned by DJI. DJI, of course, makes probably the best drones in the business, but not exactly who we envision taking over Hasselblad. So we'll see how that all works out. But boy, to me, that was a big story. It's funny, this week we're talking about Polaroid, talking about Kodak, talking about Hasselblad. Ah, change. It's all over the place, isn't it? Fisheye in Vegas. So those of you that follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, you may have noticed that I was relying heavily on my newish Rokinon 7.5mm f3.5 fisheye lens during this trip. I had to buy this lens. I told this story earlier. I had to buy this lens for a corporate assignment that I had in order to do this ginormous group shot. And it worked out great. And, you know, I wasn't really bummed that I had to buy this lens because I wanted it anyway. I just needed justification. And that assignment gave me that very justification. I had been waiting to take this thing to Las Vegas because this seems like a perfect optic for this craziness that goes on there. And it was. And I had so much fun with it. And to tell you the truth, when I wasn't doing product shooting for my reporting and I was out bouncing around, I was shooting with that lens, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I just thought, what a neat luxury and what a neat exercise to just say, you know what? I'm going to go street shooting in Las Vegas on a clear night with my Micro Four Thirds camera, my Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II, and a 7.5mm f3.5 fisheye lens and see what I can get. Oh, what a blast. So, those of you contemplating spending a little bit of money on an exotic, this is a good one. I'll tell you, the images were crisp, the colors were vibrant, the exposures were accurate, and it was a hoot. Highly recommended, $249. Of course, I have the link to it in the show notes. I'm very good about that. The link's right there. And I just give it a big thumbs up. Especially if you're going somewhere crazy like Las Vegas, Manhattan, you know, something like that. What a great lens. All right, just a little bit of update here, a little bit of Virtual Camera Club news. Let's see what I got for you. Just want to mention that we have tiles for both Amazon and B&H on the site. They're in the second column there. And if you're going to do any shopping on either of those sites, if you go to those tiles first, if you go to those advertisements, Just click on them. They'll take you over to their site. Then you can use search to find what you want. By doing that, though, then that enables my affiliate credentials, and your shopping helps support the site. And I love it. It doesn't cost you a penny more, but it really does help out the digital story. And, you know, it helps pay the bills along with our wonderful Patreon members. And we have some new Patreon members that have come on board. Welcome. Thank you so much for being a part of our inner circle. You know, the folks that we have that are part of Patreon, I just have to say that it has to feel good when you hear a show now. Does it feel different? Just go, yeah, like, I'm making that happen. I'm helping that happen. Anyway, big thanks to all of our Patreon members. And, of course, all the other folks that are contributing in all sorts of ways. You guys are just really terrific because you're finding ways to help keep this thing going. And I so appreciate it so much. And speaking of people helping to keep things going, how about Red River Paper? They're getting the job done. I'm excited to be working with them this year, 2017. And we've got a lot of big plans. I talked about out of Chicago last week. And we've got some other things that we're talking about. You know, now that I'm not traveling, I look forward to doing a little bit of printing some of my adventures on paper. And guess what I'm going to be printing on? Yes, you guessed it, Red River Paper. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they are our longest running supporter. And I just love working with them. All righty. So that's going to do it for me. How'd I sound this week? Did I sound like I've been ravaged by virus? If not, I am so happy. And if you heard a little bit, believe me, I tried to hide it. I did. But I'll be back next week, and this thing will be totally out of my system by then. I got some new stories I'm working on. Please come back and join me. Love having you as part of our community here. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.